From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
This past weekend, peace activists from around the world converged on Dublin, Ireland, for the global campaign against U.S. NATO military bases. Black Agenda Report columnist Margaret Kimberly was one of those in attendance, and we spoke with her via Skype Tuesday.
Margaret, welcome back to the United States.
Thank you very much.
So we're talking about the International Conference Against U.S. NATO Military Bases, which was held in Dublin, Ireland.
Yes. And this is a the second conference. This is the first international conference. We met first in Baltimore earlier this year in January 2018. The group, this coalition of groups dedicated to ending this spread of U.S. 800 bases and other facilities around the world. So we met in Baltimore to plan and to talk about and to learn about the extent of the U.S. presence in so many different countries. And so there was a decision made to have an international conference, which would allow some people to attend who may find it difficult, if not impossible, to enter the United States. And one of the coalition members is an Irish group called PANA, Peace and Neutrality Alliance. Ireland is officially neutral. It's not a member of NATO. And yet they gave permission right after 9/11 for the U.S. military to use a base in Shannon, Ireland, which is a political issue there. So PANA were the hosts. There were about 300 people from 35 different nations. And I chaired the panel discussing AFRICOM.
Yeah. I caught the live stream. First of all, hats off to whoever ran the live stream. I got to capture things off of the internet from time to time for, you know, radio, and the audio quality of a lot of things. You know, I mean, you know, we're always working on a shoestring. It is always a little difficult and too often not airworthy for commercial, quote unquote, radio. But both the video and audio on that stream were fantastic. They were truly broadcast quality, and you know, they were almost invisible, so that you felt like you were in attendance and could hear what was being said, which is the point of it. So whoever did that, get them back for the next one. They did a really good job.
Sure will. We'll do that.
So were the speakers too, though. I saw the panel on AFRICOM, and I'd like to get some of your thoughts and observations about that.
Yes, I chaired the meeting on AFRICOM. AFRICOM is the U.S. Africa Command, and one of the hats I wear is as a coordinating committee member of the Black Alliance for Peace. And Black Alliance for Peace has committed itself to demanding an end to AFRICOM. It started in October 1st, 2008, during the tail end of the Bush administration. And I don't know how many people know that the United States has divvied up the world into various commands. There's a NORTHCOM and a SOUTHCOM and a CENTCOM, and they started an AFRICOM, although it is headquartered in Stuttgart, Germany.
Right.
And at the time, there were only a couple of U.S. military facilities on the continent. Now there are more than 80. Most African nations have joined AFRICOM, which means that their militaries are controlled by the United States.
Right.
And this is very dangerous for the continent. It not only is it's always bad. Someone asked me over the weekend, is there anything good about U.S. Military interventions or any military activities? And I said no. And this person asked me, well, is it possible they could help, or they could bring doctors, or they could? And my response was, if countries all over the world were allowed to develop without interference, they wouldn't need doctors from other countries. Our goal should be to work for self-determination of all nations, instead of having a system where the United States decides who can and can't run a country and overthrow someone if they don't like them. And if they're socialists, they destroy the country and then point fingers and say, oh, see, socialism doesn't work. So there is nothing, all that to say, there's nothing good about this presence. It's always, of course, couched in humanitarian terms, peace and development. But just to use Somalia as an example, Somalia ended a disastrous war with Ethiopia only for the United States to involve itself, to actually send troops at one point, to make sure that this country was not allowed to free itself and be independent. So when you send, when AFRICOM, when Kenya, for example, joins AFRICOM, and it's couched in the terms of fighting the war on terror, fighting al-Shabaab in Somalia, there wouldn't be an al-Shabaab if the United States would leave Somalia alone.
Right.
So at any rate, that is an example of the problems that the U.S. presence creates. I was joined on the panel by Paul Prumphrey, the founder of Friends of Congo, also a coordinating committee member of Black Alliance for Peace, Anna Tumbo from Kenya, president of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, Kenya, and Chris Matlako from the South African Peace Initiative. And we did a very good job, if I may say so, with talking about various permutations of AFRICOM and the impact of the U.S. role, and pointing out that it's a part of a continuing scramble for Africa, which started in the 1880s with the Berlin Conference, when European nations divided up the continent and independence, technical independence, but the former colonizers, especially France, made sure that their colonies were dependent on the colonizing nations. So this is actually not a new story. So our goal with the Black Alliance for Peace is to demand, especially now that the Democrats are in control of Congress. Let's see what this really means after all. We have a petition. You can find it on the Black Alliance for Peace website. You can also go to change.org and search for AFRICOM and find our petition, which is now in six languages, I believe six: English, French, Spanish, Arabic, German, Vietnamese. I think that's six. And we are trying to get to 10,000 signatures by January 15th, which is Dr. King's birthday. Right. And our petition demands an end to AFRICOM and demands that the Congressional Black Caucus take up this issue, hold hearings, and lead the effort to end this interference with African nations. Now, you know, people may snicker at the thought of that, but we know that we are, in making this demand, we're going to be exposing them as the collaborators that they are. It's been a long time since the Congressional Black Caucus has been the conscience of the Congress, a very long time, as they have succumbed to money in politics, some of their members being targeted for defeat. It's been a long time since they were the most progressive members. They've moved rightward along with the rest of the Democratic Party. But we're going to do this anyway. And it's important for Black Alliance for Peace to be a part of these international efforts to keep Africa in the forefront and AFRICOM in the forefront as a tool of U.S. and NATO in trying to control as much of the world as possible. Recently, Germany started sending troops to Niger. I mean, why is Germany in Niger?
Right.
I mean, we know Niger has uranium. It is uranium, correct? Yellow cake uranium. Am I saying the right mineral?
Yes, you are.
Anyway.
Yep.
Okay. So there's an American presence. AFRICOM was first in the news about a year ago when four American troops were killed there.
Right.
AFRICOM hardly ever made it into the word in the corporate media,
right.
And politicians didn't talk about it. And some of them, right. Some members of Congress actually claimed they didn't know there was an American presence in Niger, and who knows whether they're being shifty or just are that stupid or just don't care enough.
They vote on the funding for it, so somewhere.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. They know that troops are being sent somewhere.
Yep.
And that's the other reason that Black Alliance for Peace is in existence, this enormous military budget, which Democrats vote. You know, it's a funny thing about Trump. They all talk about Trump. He's a fascist. He's a racist. He's a, you know, I could go on and on with the pejorative terms, and I'm not defending him. But if you think he's a moron and a psycho, why did you give him more military, a bigger military budget than the one he requested? And most members of the Congressional Black Caucus joined in that charade as well. And now, being typical Democrats, they out of one side of their mouth, they'll talk about spending on the human needs of Americans. And on the other hand, they'll vote for a bigger military budget. Well, you can't have both. So you either want a bigger military budget or you want the government to take care of human needs. You cannot have both, which they know. They're just being cynical. So that's another reason why it's important to carry that demand to them.
You know, there's a few things that people should know. We've been covering AFRICOM really since we started doing these newscasts. I remember first hearing of AFRICOM during the presidential campaign in 2008 when I was covering Cynthia McKinney. And she was talking about how it was working its way through Congress and was likely to be approved in, you know, September, October. It ended up being October of 2008. At the time, the U.S. had its headquarters. The headquarters were still in Stuttgart, but that was pretty much the real estate that it owned. I learned from listening to the broadcast on Sunday that AFRICOM did, or the U.S. in any event, did have a couple of bases, three, I think they said, on the continent at the time of the inception of AFRICOM. But now, if you look at the website, which is AFRICOM.mil, AFRICOM.mil for military, the area of responsibility, there are 52 African nations, is divided into West, South, Central, East, and North Africa, and just about every nation state on the continent is listed there as an area of responsibility of the United States Africa Command, which is what AFRICOM stands for. And you mentioned the relationship between the old colonial powers and the new ones. It's funny, with Germany, first of all, they fought two world wars basically to keep Germany out of Africa so that the England and France and the U.S. could own it. And now they get a boat ride in on some U.S. aircraft carrier. Like France, for example, when they started the takedown of the resistance to a U.S. occupation of Africa during the Obama administration. Obama, by the way, this is his child. It went from zero to 52 nations during the Obama administration, except for the last couple over the last year or two. You had France essentially escort the president of Cote d'Ivoire, an independent country, an independent president, out of the presidential palace at gunpoint and install a guy who used to be it wasn't the WTO, it was the IMF, with the International Monetary Fund, as president, right before they got rid of Gaddafi.
Yes, I mean, as I was saying, I touched on it briefly.
Yeah.
France is the biggest perpetrator of maintaining their colonial relationships. Their currency, they control the Francophone, their former colonies, control their finances.
Right. They still print francs, even though they don't use them in France anymore. They still print the francs for the old colonies.
Yes, they do. They have it's called the CFA, I believe. But at any rate, France is always intervening in African countries. And Macron, he visited, can't recall which country last year, and lectured Africans about not complaining anymore about colonialism and taking responsibility. You know, so yes, it's a multinational effort. And all this talk about having a European army is not a good thing. People being tripped up by Trump yet again because he doesn't have a good relationship with Macron or Merkel. Their call for a European army is not a call for peace. It's a call for more militarism, just loosening the connection with the United States.
Right.
So this is an ongoing problem for the world in general and for Africa in particular to free itself from the domination of European countries and the U.S. And yes, you're right. They did steal Germany's. It's interesting. It's commemorated the 100th anniversary of the end of World War One, and without mentioning that the war was fought for empire, and Germany's colonies were snatched up by in Africa were snatched up by Britain and France. So, but that's another story. The way World War One was remembered, it was a lost opportunity to talk about some important issues, and it was all about. What is it? Poppies and Jeremy Corbyn was criticized because his poppy was smaller than somebody else's. I mean, it was horrible. But yes, it's 100 years ago, these various powers in Europe joined somewhat late in the game by the United States, blundered their way into a world war. I don't think any of them thought they were going to have a war that killed millions of people that was going to last for 4 years. But that's exactly what happened. And I mentioned that to say that I'm always fearful of unintended consequences. I think these world leaders are not as smart as we often think they are. And they can do things to start something bigger than what they intended.
Yeah. Yeah, in an age of nuclear weapons, that's a pretty scary concept, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So, some of the other panels, some of the other discussions that took place centered on militarism, nuclear weapons, and military bases. You'd mentioned there's more than 800 of those. The environmental and health impacts of those bases, I don't think people are aware of the fact that just the scale of environmental impact of all of that. And then some of the other areas, like Southcom, you mentioned before, and Asia-Pacific, Middle East, of course, which has been one very busy area for the U.S., certainly, and its NATO allies as its couch. Maybe you want to do a little tour of the landscape on that stuff.
Sure. It was, as I said, an international conference, and there were panels devoted to different regions of the world. It's very interesting what's happening in Okinawa. There is the people do not want an expense. A huge American military presence in Okinawa, in Japan, although the Okinawans are their own ethnicity. It's essentially a big landing strip for the United States. There are all kinds of problems, health problems. You know, all of these bases, by the way, they bring with them pollution. The Defense Department, I believe, is the biggest polluter in the world. And all of these climate change agreements exempt the military. I don't know if people were aware of that. And also, Okinawans want to be sovereign. They want to be sovereign from Japan. But the United States has been permitted to continue to expand its military presence there, and people there do not want it. And the people who have advocated and taken action against it have been the targets of the Japanese state. So there was a panel, an Asia-Pacific panel, and which discussed the situation in Okinawa. There were Australians there talking about the huge military presence there. There's a surveillance facility in a place called Pine Gap, and the NSA uses it to spy on the entire world. Mm. There's also a huge fleet in the Pacific, and anything that happens in Asia, we have to assume it's being directed against China. The Korea issue, it is a good thing that the two Koreas are talking about some form of reunification in some way. It's a good thing that the U.S. is talking to the DPRK, to North Korea. There are concerns about the ever expanding number of NATO nations. After the fall of the Soviet Union, NATO expanded right up to Russia's borders, which is incredibly dangerous. And a lot of these countries didn't really even want to join NATO. They wanted to join the EU. But it's almost a requirement of EU membership to become a NATO member as well. So Hungary and Poland and the Czech Republic, and there were people from some of these nations who are opposed to the expanding American presence in their countries. There are a huge number of American facilities in Italy, in Greece. There are panelists from the Caribbean and Latin America. One of our keynote speakers was Dr. Aleida Guevara, Che Guevara's daughter. She's a physician, a member of the Cuban Assembly, talking about Guantanamo. We still have this base on the island of Cuba. The threats against Venezuela, the threats against Nicaragua. Colombia, they're making Colombia, the South American nation, a member of NATO. And that will be can be used. Venezuela is right next door. Right. So Colombia is a key part of the U.S. Attack on that country. So all of these regions, also the continuing expansion of NATO in Europe, these tiny countries, Montenegro and Macedonia, and they're changing the name of Macedonia to because Greece doesn't want it to be called Macedonia. But right. I don't know why it needs to be in NATO anyway. And then, of course, we're told that Putin is evil and wants to expand everywhere. And it looks to me like it's the Western nations that want to expand everywhere. Right, right. Russia has a military presence in, I think, 7 or 8 countries, you know, as opposed to the 100 countries that have U.S. and NATO military presence. So we spoke of all these things. We spoke about the environmental damage done by these military facilities. Enduring environmental damage, chemicals that leach into the soil, and even if a military base leaves, the environment in this particular location can be endangered for decades to come. And we talked about how to mobilize. And that's the for me that is the key. How do we mobilize? That's why I'm happy about the Black Alliance for Peace effort. This is a beginning of our making a political demand, you know, putting people on notice about the Democratic Party and how it works. We're told that it was so important for the Democrats to win the majority in the House, and so we're going to find out if they support their people. It isn't clear to me that most Americans are aware of AFRICOM's existence or its extent. You know, when those soldiers were killed, the big story was Trump insulting the widow, and he insulted the congresswoman, right. And what did they say? And it was an opportunity to talk about AFRICOM,
right.
And to talk about the U.S. military presence on the continent. So we want to bring it back there. And all these members of the Congressional Black Caucus who got involved in this food fight with Trump, now they can talk about AFRICOM. We're going to ask them to do that.
Good.
And it's a way for us to also to mobilize people, to bring awareness, and to also to activate our population so that people can stop. That's what I always want anyway, to stop this dependence on the Democratic Party and this belief that the only thing saving us from barbarism is this party that does nothing or acts against our interests.
Now, just looking at the you know, the condition of I guess the left, the you know, forces inside the United States in opposition to imperialism, to the empire. We have a lot of work to do, and you're poised to do a lot. Your involvement with this transnational grouping and organizing it further is really important. Also with the Black Alliance for Peace, and you have a lot of heads because you got all those hats. UNAC, the United National Anti-War Coalition. You know, the demands that are being raised all across the United States for things that are needed, depending on, it doesn't even matter which political figure people line up behind, whether it's jobs or, assistance with housing or education expense or health care or whatever. You know, there are desperate needs and they're not being met, and they can't be met unless the money is diverted from the military, bottom line.
Exactly.
And so making that connection is very difficult because the media is, you know, not just complicit but an active participant in the militarization of the society and the maintenance of that condition. But the material demands of the people are there, and they don't go away without being satisfied. Is there some kind of a strategy that we can be working on developing further or helping in one way or another that's maybe underway to sort of move this process along so we're not dead before we finally get to a point where it can happen?
I think it's important for those of us on the left, and that, you know, in this country, with every the two political parties moving ever further to the right, any neoliberal Democrat gets to call themselves on the left. But those of us who are really on the left, who are in favor of true democracy, who want to see huge cuts in the military budget, who want to see the government resume its role, its proper role with its people, and regulate corporations to do away with corporate personhood and billionaire rule. Those are the things I believe that make, among others, put one on the left. It's important for us to maintain our stance. It's important for us to differentiate ourselves. It's important for us not to allow people to be phony and call themselves progressives when they're not, and to keep making the case for these issues that I mentioned, and to not be afraid to denounce the Democratic Party. The Democrats are the problem, and our goal as leftists should not be to create a third party. Our system is very hostile to third parties and relegates them to spoiler status. But we need to be the second party. We need to build a true people's party, a true workers' party, a true peace party, and put the Democrats out of business. And we cannot be afraid. We cannot be intimidated by allowing the people who put Trump in office to blame us for putting Trump in office to silence us. So I think we have to plant our flag.
Yeah, and by the way, had we not put Trump in office and we put Hillary Clinton in office, you would still have to have had this conference because, if anything, we'd have more war going on than we do now.
Yeah, she is. It's so hard to talk. It's funny because everything, it's hypothetical because she didn't become president. So all we have to rely on is her word.
Her word. But, that's dicey for American politicians, though. That is dicey.
Yeah. For what she said. And at any rate, she said she wanted to establish a no-fly zone in Syria, which would have escalated the situation there. She was very much anti-Russian. She never passed up an opportunity to talk about the need to confront Putin and so on. I mean, it was kind of crazy. But yes, we still would have to do this. You know, the Democrats have not. I mean, when have they been the party of peace? So she would have, if we believe what the thing she said she was going to do, she would have continued the anti-Russia policy. She is a cold warrior. She is a neoliberal. She is a neocon. So yes, if you have a Democratic president, you still have to have an international effort of solidarity against imperialism and U.S. and NATO interventions. That's something that will not change if you have a Democrat in the White House. And, you know, when that day comes that there is a Democrat back in the White House, people should not fold up their tents and breathe a sigh of relief.
Yeah.
That it's not the awful Republicans, and realize, especially when it comes to foreign policy, that there's no difference between the two parties.
Yeah, last time we did that, we got AFRICOM. Margaret, thank
yes,
you very
we did.
Much.
Yes.
Margaret,
among
Kimberly.
Other things.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.